Thank you, Tony, for this introduction. Okay, so I was thinking when you're talking about generation, right? Okay, at least I have some people like you, yeah, of the same generation here. But in some sense, it's kind of I'm looking for a point. In some sense, okay, maybe not crucial. I can show. In some sense, it's my talk is rather late. Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. Because I think that it what I'm talking about, it's like stuff which was going on in 1970, 1972. Should be, you know, much earlier, but I believe that in 72 it was no institute here, and even if it would be, I probably would not be allowed to come. So, not because of the institute, but So okay, but maybe better late than never. So anyway, I'm trying to tell this story, which starts indeed long ago. And it is, okay, that has a title about Can the Graviton Have Mass? What I'll try to talk about, it's a beginning, and okay, because as I said, it's rather old stuff, so I probably should apologize to people who, you know, knew this stuff very well. But I'd like to start from kind of a little bit more general issue about transition to masses limit, particularly if in framework of vector series, and then go. To this last part, which is about discussion possible mass for the graviton. So in this way, okay, here is the plan of the talk, and I mentioned, you know, that this idea that to talk about this vector series, and it is a part which is well known, of course. However, because it's much better understood, it's probably easier to follow this part. So. So it's kind of motivation that to consider this massless theory, which describes long-range forces, and it seems natural that if you have some theory which discuss where massless particle are responsible for long-range forces, to look for the theory which is a neighbor to the theory and contains finite range forces, massive particle. And I think that it was kind of, I don't know, it's not a ceiling, but maybe prejudice. And I did try to mention this famous paper of Feynman of 1963 in Acta Physica Polonica, where he did try to discuss, his idea was about to discuss quantization of gravity, actually. But he started to discuss it from quantization of non-abelian vector field theory, so quantizing Mill theory. What he did actually, without, you know, any kind of even justification, that he believes that quantization of Young-Mill theory should be done in the following way: start with Young-Mill theory with the mass term, quantize it, and then consider massless limit. In this way, he even found, you know, this so-called this first example of Gauss there. However, he missed the fact that discontinuity in the limit when mass goes to zero. So there is some extra star which corresponds to longitudinal polarization of vector field. But what I'm trying to say is that it was for him very natural attitude to quantize it this way. So. For particle with spin 0 and 1 half, it works, without problem. And we know that this limit works for QED, where we can start from massive photon and then consider a limit of masses 1 and to see that there is a matching. Case where subtlety starts, it's non-abelian Young-Mill theory. So continuity there is, could be achieved, but there is a subtlety, and I'm going to discuss it a little bit more. But the more dramatical, you know, this type of behavior appears for massive gravity. So, for the mass of gravity, what we are comparing it is long-range forces in standard Einstein theory of gravity, so exchange by masses graviton, with a theory where we have a finite range interaction, and it is exchange of by massive spin 2 particle. So. So when this mass of this massive tensor particle goes to zero, the question is what we will get in the limit, and it is what was studied by three papers in and all of those papers are actually in the same year, 1970, Awasaki, Van Dam, Weltman, and Zakharov, they found that this limit of when mass goes to zero does exist, so you can go to the limit. However, this limit does not coincide with the one particle exchange by graviton in masses theory. And this type of discontinuity immediately leads to physical prediction of different value for bending of the light in the by the sun, and the difference is 25%. So in this way, it's certainly it's much larger than experimental uncertainty in measuring the effect. So it certainly doesn't fit phenomenology. So it is this 97, it is a starting point. Okay, now I'm trying to be a little bit more systematic. I'm trying to communicate you some generalities, which probably all of you know very well. It is the following, just from theoretical point of view, the difference between massive and massless states starts already at the theory of representation of Poincaré group. So for non-zero mass, we know that one invariant is M square, translations are gives you a quantum number which we call p mu, and this is a small group characterized by spin. So we have particle with spin s and two s plus one polarization state for this particle. So it is a multiplet of this Poincaré group with dimension 2 s plus one. While for mass equals zero, all representation are singlets, so one dimensional, because representation is characterized by helicity, the only way to kind of spread out the representation, it's to apply some discrete groups like CPT. CPT tells us that together with helicity H, we have helicity minus H. This discrete symmetry is sufficient if you're considering spin zero on 1/2, right? For spin zero, we have one state anyway. In both cases, for spin 1/2, depends, what do we have, leptonic charge or fermionic charge, or do not have. Including corresponding number of discrete symmetries, we do have correspondence in number of states. So in this sense, there is no discontinuity, at least in multiplicity of the state. However, when we come to spin one for vector field, we already dealing with three states at m equal not equal zero, and with two states for massless photon, for example, which has only helicity plus minus one. So let's start from this abelian case for the start. Okay, so again, textbook reminder that it is a classical Lagrangian for QED, this Lagrangian has gauge symmetry written here, in terms of counting number of states, as we mentioned in the presentation, we have two polarization states. Here we have four fields A mu. However, because of this redundancy in gauge transformation, we can put one condition, choosing gauge condition, for example, Coulomb gauge dA equals zero. And we also can exclude the field A0, which is non-dynamical, does not contain time derivative in the Lagrangian. So in this sense, we have two degrees of freedom in correspondence with two heuristics of the state. If you will try to describe massive vector fields, then we are adding mass storm, and this mass storm is just a mu square. So, okay, if you'll try just to count number of degrees of freedom, so then there is no Gaussian variance anymore, but we can exclude A0 because it's again still non-dynamical. So we have three fields, so we have 3 degrees of freedom. So there is a discrepancy in number of degrees of freedom, but okay, here I'm trying to mention that sometimes is formulated that the introduction of the mass breaks Gaussian variance. Okay, no, I mean I would not say that I like this statement, because in some sense it's not Gaussian variance by itself; it's a number of degrees of freedom which counts. Only that. So Gaussian variance helps us to organize Lorentz invariant theory for vector A mu and still have 2 degrees of freedom. So essentially we are saying that we have 2 degrees of freedom there, but. When we are coming to massive field, we immediately can make a theory also gauge invariant, and it is an example. Let's put, instead of a mu in mass storm, let's put a mu plus d mu phi. Then the theory is gauge invariant and the shift before for a mu, and together with the shift of phi, and it is gauge invariant. And I mean, probably everybody learned it very well from Higgs mechanism, but you know, but it was even without any Higgs mechanism visible as well. So the point is not engage variance, but in terms of to see what happens with the third degrees of freedom, right? So if we started from massive vector field. Then in this Placard formalism, which I was referring to, we have a condition that d mu a mu equals zero in terms of polarization, k mu epsilon mu equals zero, so we have 3 polarization. In the rest frame, this 3 polarization is just the three which is written here. And let's say that we start from the rest frame and then boost the system along x-axis. To get a particle with non-zero energy. So when we boost this, then this transversal polarization stays the same, and this is the part which was polarization was oriented along direction of boost becomes k over m and epsilon energy over m, where k is a spatial moment of this. So let's rewrite this polarization. For Newtonian polarization is the following form. You can see that it could be written in the form k mu divided by m plus this term. So it's just identical rewriting of the previous expression. So the first term, which is k mu over m, which drops out, will drop out from the interaction because the interaction has this form g mu epsilon mu, and so we have a divergence of the current entering from the first term, and if the current is conserved, so it drops out. So the second term is clearly vanishes in the limit of m goes to zero. So what we see here, that this longitudinal polarization decouples in the limit of m goes to zero, and it is the reason that we will come to the theory with only 2 polarization instead of 3. Okay, strictly speaking, we need to generalize it to not to one photon, but few one. So we have, few epsilon, but because all of them neutral, the same feature would be for arbitrary number of photons. And that's enough then to say that there is a smooth limit. And while the consideration is refers like to 3 diagons, we can see that it is sufficient to state about the loops following, for example, dispersion approach, that it would be continuous transition. Okay. Next step, it is also vector theory, but now non-abelian one. So what we are trying to discuss here, it is the same issue. We have this non-Lagrangian for Young-Mills field. It is massless one. And we trying to generalize it, adding up mass storm. Again, it is a hot mass, so it's Prakha formula is mass gain. Now we are trying to repeat the same as we discussed before, namely calculate the amplitude of the process with some number of those non-abelian longitudinal polarization. Remember that this the longitudinal polarization are clearly the most dangerous because they are containing this kinematical K energy divided by M. You have a question? Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You mean for abelian case, it would be k mu over m will vanish for this t mu, yeah, for every one, right? Because it's your what identity, right? Because you have a kind of t product of current, right? And every current is conserved. Okay. I miss probably then. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. No. So what I imply and always that I'm dealing only because if current would be not conserved, then certainly it would be no even in abelian case it would be no smooth transition to m equals zero for sure. But look, this is kind of hopeless approach then because we know that the theory of masses field is possible that such theory to exist only if the current is conserved. So in this way, I'm not considering other cases because then, it could be subtlety in what you asked. That, for example, you have a non-conserved current which becomes conserving in the limit m goes to zero, but then you need to make your current dependent on this parameter. Okay, but anyway, here we have a few polarization and they are non-abelian and we are doing the same trick. We are substituting polarization for longitudinal part in the same way. This chi A, I put here its color direction of polarization. When we will substitute this polarization here, we can try to do the same, namely to say that K mu acting on this T mu, which is a kind of T product of current, is zero. And it is correct. So you will get indeed zero in this upper line. In this case, so the most dangerous term goes away. However, the difference with an abelian case appears at the level of the next quanta. Let's say that we have two of them. Two longitudinal quanta. So the first one I already substituted by only this non-singular part in polarization. Now here it is the second one, and here I put only the singular part. Because this polarization is not on mass shell, because k square is equal m square. However, polarization is which I put here doesn't satisfy k mu epsilon mu equals zero, right? For this. So we can check explicitly for calculating diagrams that in this case this k two mu acting on this t mu is not zero. So here it's an example of this diagram. So you have this one and this one. You can check that what is k to mu, where for the first polarization we are not on, with the physical vector, and we'll find out that the answer is non-zero, particularly if color direction are different, so do not commute in. Otherwise, you do not have this diagram. So it means that you have SU2, so you have, for example, W plus, W minus. Not W zero twice. If it would be W zero twice, it would be the same as it was in abelian case. But for different one, would be non-zero. So what we got here is finite discontinuity, because M cancels with M, so we have a finite difference. And then you can go on and continue with the other one, and what we will find out is that the amplitude for N heuristic zero quanta is proportional to coupling constant in this power, but it's proportional to energy over M in the power number of quanta minus 2. And it is the answer which, I mean, we got with Keplerovich in 1971. But I'm not sure, this paper was not very much publicized. After that, it was a lot of consideration within a standard model that's called equivalence theorem, where you consider, essentially, it was the approach which we used, I mean, earlier in this study. Anyway, what we see that from here, that the mass zero limit is not a good one. So it's clearly singular, and the more quanta you have, the more singular the limit is. So, okay, we can. It's convenient to try to summarize this discontinuity, this singular behavior, writing effective Lagrangian for this zero heuristic state. So only for the more singular part. This could be done similar like we discussed for Abelian case by so-called Schuckenbergian method, namely let's substitute a mu. By this gauge transformation. The point is the following. A mu was in Prakar formalism, so it was no gauge freedom for a mu. However, when I substitute this fixed a mu in terms of b and u, then there is a gauge freedom how I reshuffle between b and u. So again, like it was in Abelian case, I'm getting back gauge invariance. And this gauge invariance could be written in the following form. That matrix S is a matrix of gauge transformation, so you are transforming B and U simultaneously, and the mu stays intact. Using this gauge transformation, what we can say? We can say, so let's fix B, for example, to be in Coulomb gauge, so have only referring only to transversal polarization. Then all longitudinal polarization would be sitting in U, with this way of reshuffling. So then it's very simple to get a Lagrangian of this heuristic zero states. So let's substitute this emitting, let's put B equals zero from the previous transparency, and substitute to Lagrangian, then the only term which would continue, it would come from mass term M square A square, and we'll get this form. If you look at this, you will immediately recognize that's how it's called principal current model, I mean, what is written here. Because U is a matrix, so it is the model which you can recognize as a chiral Lagrangian for prime mesons in SU2. So in SU2 cross SU2. Here, for simplicity, I meant to say SUM. But anyway, you have this part, and you see that you have this chiral model with a coupling which is given G square over M square, and coupling goes to infinity when M goes to zero. So it means that it is if we consider this limit, we are considering the limit of, some coupling, right? We have a chiral model with a coupling goes to infinity, and it's clear that we cannot say much about behavior of the model in this case, so we do not know what would be the limit, because then we need to solve this problem, for some coupling. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just am confused really right at the start here because my understanding is these non-abelian gauge theories are strongly coupled in the infrared.
Yeah, right. But here, no. Yeah.
To what? I mean,
No. That's
the mass.
Yeah, no.
We don't have to solve
no.
that.
No. Here, in this way, if you like, it is ultraviolet parameter. Because
is that the question? What are we actually asking?
So we are talking about short distances. Because, look, I'm considering in this way energies to be large and Euclidean. So in this way, I'm not going to, to the dangerous part where strong interaction becomes strong, okay?
We're asking, is the mass when zero limit smooth in the ultraviolet?
Yeah. Okay. So in this way, you are considering distances which are small, but you have, in this sense, you're right that you can say that you have a scale lambda, right? however, now you have two scales. One is lambda or QCD, and another scale is M, right? And M is your parameter, and what I'm trying to say here is that this parameter has an ultraviolet meaning, right? Because you see that it leads to this extra states. behaves, amplitude grows with energy, so in this way it's short distance. And what we are asking ourselves, whether it's possible to decouple this extra, states which we introduce by hand, right, when we introduce mass. In masses, in pure and new theory, it was not these states which described by you at all. So the whole stuff was not there. So in this way, I cannot answer this I don't know the answer for the Song Kalpin in this chiral model. However, what we know instead that we can make this Song Kalpin disappear. And the way to do it, as you know, it is to consider the model with the same symmetry as here, so also chiral model, but not renormalizable one, the one which does not grow at large energies like here. Namely, if it would be SU2, so we will consider, for example, instead of pi and Lagrangian, we'll consider nonlinear sigma model, and then in nonlinear sigma model you have a new parameter which is mass of this extra field. So you have your field like 3 pi n, which describe matrix U, and you have extra field sigma, which you are adding up as a coefficient for U. And then you know that this growth stops at mass at energies of order of sigma. So and in this sense, you do not have a Song Kalpin anymore. So you have normal renormalizable theory. However, and in this sense, you have a limit of masses particle, if you like. So then in this renormalizable theory, it's a mass of vacuum average of your sigma field, which regulates what is the mass of vector field. And it is so-called Higgs mechanism. But the price we are paying for having a smooth limit is to say that we introduce extra fields in the theory. So we cannot do it in pure in new theory, saying that we add this one and then everything is okay. If we have this extra field, you know, this Higgs field in the theory, then we can say that in terms of this extended theory, the limit does exist.
I'm
sorry. Yeah? Yeah. No. I'm talking about mass of W. So about energy is much larger than the mass of W.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you look here, then you would say that longitude of W, the cross section would be growing.
But if the electron mass is zero.
Yeah. For example.
The singularities cancel between the diagrams, right? The E over M.
No. No. You have to have okay. Depends on the process. If you're considering a process with two W, you're right. If you're considering a higher process, because look here, I isolated what is here. It is a process of scattering of longitudinal on the longitudinal, right here. Yeah. Yeah, but what we are saying, it's an example like I talk about with two particle. When it was two particle, it was no growth, right? It was a finite discontinuity, but it was no growth. Growth starts n minus two. Remember that it is the power of energy. It is number of longitudinal polarization minus two. Okay, So here it is this end of this story, which I'm not trying to talk about details. What I'm trying to go to is to the main subject of this presentation. It's about what's going on with the gravity. Mm-hmm. So again, we know very well Lagrangian for masses gravity. So it is given by scalar curvature and mass Planck's way, it is 1 over Newtonian constant G. And then what we are trying to do, like before, we are trying to add something which would give mass to the field H mu defined as deviation from Minkowski metric. So our field theory, it is field theory of H mu nu, which is deviation from Minkowski metric, and here it is quadratic term constructed from H mu nu, which has the name of Pauli Fields term. They suggested this in 39, and it is in this okay linearized form or quadratic approximation for Lagrangian. It's the only one which consistent with absence of Gauss, so it gives you correct description. But what means correct description? So we are trying to describe spin 2, so 5 polarization state in this case, and at least in linear approximation for theory or quadratic approximation Lagrangian, together with quadratic there, you will see that it is indeed spin massive field with the spin equal 2. So in this sense, at least in linearized approximation, we reminds Prokof formulas like it was before. So we can again go through, this construction of spin equal 2, and we'll find out that that we have 5 states indeed. So we have symmetric tensor H mu nu with two type of condition. One condition is like it was before, k mu h mu nu equals zero, and another condition is the trace of h equals zero. So counting 4 condition for longitudinal and 1 condition for trace gives you 5, and out of 10 components there is 5 physical one. So I'm not trying to write all of them, but I'm trying to write the one which would again has analog of longitudinal polarization, namely Hirschi zero state. So in the rest frame, I'm taking this matrix H, and it has the form 2 minus 1 minus 1, normalized to 1 by this square root of 6. And it is analog of what was, epsilon, which we considered before. Now, again, let's make a boost. If you make a boost, we get... for this upper left angle, we will get this matrix. And it's similar to what was before, but you see that the power of E over M, it's, you have the same boost, but on both sides of H mu nu, right? So you have a second power of E over M here naturally. And then the result could be rewritten in this form. Again, it is k mu, along this the momentum of the state plus some look here finite matrix. Remember before it was k mu over m plus m multiplied by something. Now it is k mu divided by n square plus the term which is a finite one. So what does it mean? Consider emission of this Hirschi zero quanta. Then term k mu over n square will drops out because interaction has a form h mu multiplied by energy momentum tensor t mu, which is conserved. But the second term, it just gives you, essentially it gives you a trace of this. There's some subtlety about transversal, but if you look at this here, minus 1 plus 1, it is two first component of g mu. So essentially what we are getting a theory where emission of what used to be H equals zero particle, Hirschi zero particle, it's like scalar particle, right? So you have in the limit you have extra scalar particle exchange, which certainly will give you contribution to long range forces as well, because it's by unitarity, right? Because it does emit this particle, then it changes this long range behavior. And it is exactly what we could be called the origin of this Iwasaki, Van Dam, Wiedemann, Zakharov discontinuity. Because this extra state does not decouple. But remember, in our previous example, when in an abelian case, in case of 2W, they were not decoupled, it starts from 2, right? So it was, in terms of diagram, it's one loop diagram because you have 2 vector bonds. Here it starts from classical three level exchange. So at the level of 3 level exchange, you have already this problem. And here it is this 3 level exchange. So let's try to what I discussed before, it was like a cut here over a graviton. Let's say that we are considering exchange in this. Then the amplitude could be written as the product of energy momentum tensor on both sides and propagator. And what I'm having in mind, this diagram four is for the bending of light. So this lower line would be sun, and the upper red line would be photon interacting with the sun at the end. So if you write the amplitude in this form, then okay, what we can do, we can compare the form of the amplitude for a massive case and massive case. It's almost similar to what I discussed before in terms of unitarity, but there are some subtleties, so I'm trying to discuss it again in this language. In this language, the structure of propagator for massive particle is written here, and the reason to have this particular coefficient here, it is very simple. We have only helicity plus minus two states. In terms of H, it corresponds HMN with, in my language, M and N equal 2 and 3. So remember that K is along x-axis. So transversal polarization is this one. And condition is that trace equals 0. So then you have out of three elements of symmetric matrix, you have one condition and it is just two polarization. So here it is explicit form, particular form. 1-1 or 1-1 here. And then this tensor here should be the one which projects to, you know, this in the space when Mn equals 2 and 3, it should project to trace this symmetric tensor, and it is a projector. So you can check that if I'll take Mn trace, it's 0, and it fixes this coefficient. And that's why it is the same coefficient in covariant form. If you will calculate now potential, for example, for static, let's say that both lines are heavy particles, then potential is just Fourier transform of this amplitude up to known coefficient, and it gives you standard Newton law product of masses divided by R. Now it is massive case. Now let's consider massive case. So, going along the same line, we now have states in the rest frame HMN, which where M and N it is 1, 2, 3, right? Because in the it's only zero component, which is zero. And now and again trace equals zero. You can check that it is five states. Again, however, the same type of projector as we discussed here, because of the dimension, gives you a coefficient here 2/3, right? If you will take the trace now in the space of three indices, it gives you this one. Of course, we can make a boost, but boost just substitute this delta by, you know, some Lorentz structure, and we do not need this term because it doesn't contribute to the amplitude. So then it is the answer for covariant form of propagator and with a shifted pole. And then we can calculate potential. And the potential for interaction would be, we are taking all indices zero, right, for static forces. Coefficient is minus 4/3. So you immediately have a discontinuity, right? Not in light by light, but you have discontinuity in just in normal Newton attraction. Okay, this you can say that, okay, we can revisit. First of all, let me say that it's clear that this epsilon 1/3 is spin zero particle exchange, nothing else. If you add extra scalar particles, you will get even more deviation because unitarity tells you the sign, so here deviation is 1/3, but okay, add more, then it would be additional deviation. So in the range of distances much smaller than Compton wavelengths, it still behaves like 1 over R. So you can say that, okay, let's fix this problem introducing extra new definition of Newton coupling constant for this theory. Let's say that effective coupling constant would be for third of G, because it is overall normalization of long range forces. However, it helps for static sources, but does not help for when we'll switch on scattering by light, because for the light, heat is a structure of this propagator written in a different way. So for the light, this trace equals zero. So if I normalize it to this other G, then for light by light, these terms are not important, and you have just the three force for deviation of light. If you normalize the static part, it would be okay. Of course, you can do otherwise, but then you will have problem with static part. So you see that this is a clear-cut discontinuity. It is a finite one, so there is no singularity in mass. But of course, the immediate question is that what will we do if we'll switch on graviton interaction, nonlinear terms? Because everything I said was kind of linear approximation for the gravity. And there, everything was kind of well-defined. Let's try to switch on this nonlinear interaction. We know that how it was for massive vector field. Every extra heuristic zero state gave us factor of coupling constant multiplied by energy over m. And this energy over m was kinematical. Remember, no, it was shifted by two, but after that it was every extra particle gives you energy over m. Okay, so it's effective parameter of expansion. It tells you immediately that if you are not using any Higgs mechanism, then we have a kind of critical energy where perturbation theory breaks, right? Because when you come into energy m over g, it is like analog. Effective coupling becomes one. Here, what we are doing essentially very much similar. So the first factor g, it is now energy divided mass of Planck. It is effective coupling constant in a normal gravity, right? Because normal gravity is already non-normalizable theory, so you do have this interaction. But you have extra energy square over mass of graviton square, similar like it was here for kinematical reason, for the same way. So what you see, what happens then it is your effective parameter of expansion. And if you can calculate, for example, critical energy, where this parameter becomes one, it is this one-third root of Planck mass multiplied by m square. Okay, this type of calculation recently was done by Arkany Hamed, George and Schwartz. The idea is that this long this heuristic zero state has enhanced interaction. Of course, it refers to much older papers, in particular the one I tried to when I the one which was my paper in 72 was the one where I tried to do it not by this dimensional counting, but just explicit calculation of nonlinear interaction in framework of, say, classical equations. So you have a static source, you have interaction of this heuristic zero polarization with the source. In the leading order, it's just this cross means that it is just the leading order for this vertex, which we discussed before. It's similar to a trace of energy momentum tensor. But then you have, of course, iteration, like a loop. Here, but it is kind of classical loop, so it's simpler to calculate. So if you will calculate this expansion parameter for this case, instead of energy, I'm using 1 over distance. You see what is a new element. The coupling constant is proportional to mass of sun, or to mass of the source. So it's M1 square over M Planck square over R. It is kind of normal gravity interaction. And this factor 1 over R square M square corresponds that I have two extra, I introduce extra, two extra zero, this zero heuristic exchange. So you have this parameter, and you can see that up to, you know, this, no, it's in correspondence with what we discussed before. There is a specific of having not everywhere R, but somewhere mass of the source. Up to this, it's similar to what it was. And then what you will see is that, that corrections are in the limit of some mass, you see, are blowing up as 1 over m to the 4th in for Schwarzschild problem. And okay, if you'll try to do some numerics, then what we see, that there is a critical radius, analog of what this critical energy, and this critical radius, it is square root of Schwarzschild radius divided by, multiplied by Compton wavelength in fourth power, to the power of 1/5. And then, if you'll substitute, say, for mass of Graviton, it is kind of from PDG data, but if you'll put Hubble size, it would be 10 to 28 centimeters instead, so not far away, and calculate what would be this critical radius. You will find out that for the Sun, this critical radius is 10 to 21 centimeters, which is much larger than solar system size of the 10 to 15. So in this sense, application of this kind of leading order approximation is not justified at all, of course, in this case, because you have, you know, this. Actually, if you calculate corrections are 10 to the power 32 times larger than the initial term. So clearly, you are very deeply inside in, if you like, in the ultraviolet range, right, in this sense. But ultraviolet becomes very low, right, this in terms of distances. Then we do not know, right? Because we again back to kind of some Calvin problem. So strictly speaking, we do not know. So once we at the similar stage like it was with the hot mass in non-abelian Young-Mills theory, because you see clearly, I mean, singular behavior in the limit of small mass, and it shows up as a kind of effective, I mean, coupling constant in chiral model to go to infinity, and you do not know the answer. So in this way, we are not far away from here, but here it happens earlier, because remember that they started from beyond one loop, and here, so essentially singularity starts for process more than two loops, and here it starts, you know, just for the, I mean, the leading term was three exchange, and the one loop, it already gives you this singular correction.
Now, so, there you can represent the effect as a nonlinear sigma model.
Yeah.
Is there analog here?
Yeah, no, in a sense, yes, yeah, and it is representation by, I mean, Arkany Hamed, Georgi, and Schwarz was of this kind. So certainly you can write this effective interaction. So here I applied particular to particular the process, I mean, its contribution of this to Schwarzschild problem, but of course it's true that you can write there. However, and it will be still the same problem that you do have this huge effect. So what you can do with that? Okay. No. First way to say, first approach is to say that we do not know, and we do not know what would be the answer, whether limit does exist or doesn't exist, because we are in the range of absence of real knowledge, right? But there is a possibility to try something. What we can try? One way of trying is to consider non-perturbative effect, but within classical approximation, to make it real. So, like, sum up this non-perturbative phenomena using classical approximation as a root. Okay, and it is refers to solving, this equation, right? So we have our equation, here it is, and we can try to solve this equation accounting for non-linear terms, not only in linear approximation, but accounting for non-linear terms as well.
Summing all the three
values. Right. Of course, we can solve this equation by perturbation C. Then we will reproduce the same as we discussed before, right? It would be this, the same perturbation theory for this equation. The point is to find our solution beyond perturbation theory approximation. Okay. So, In this paper 72, which I mentioned, it was an example of such solution constructed. And here it is some little bit of equations. So here it is the interval for Schwarzschild accounting for spherical symmetry. So original variables are, besides time, it is rho, theta, and phi. And then it occurs to be convenient to introduce a new coordinate r instead of original one. And the reason is that in massless theory, function mu could be taken away by gauge transformation. But now we are in Tracca form, everything is fixed. We cannot take mu away, but we can redefine what we call coordinate. And it is this definition. So if you will then look at our equation and look what solution we have, here it is a standard Schwarzschild solution in massless theory. So this mu and lambda equal log. It's enough for us to know expansion at r much larger than Schwarzschild radius. Mu is equal zero. Perturbative solution, it is example of what was discussed before. Here it is a leading term, and here is correction. And you see that perturbative solution contains one half here, while here there is no one half. And it is this discontinuity which was discussed before. But everywhere you have this huge corrections, 1 over m to the fourth. Function mu is a singular in M, but mu does not enter explicitly, so this singularity is not visible in the leading approximation. But then you have this part. Okay, so you also have, you can try this non-perturbative approach, saying that you retain not just, you are not doing, you are just saying that function, say, nu, lambda, and mu are small, but you are not saying that all of them are proportional to Newton coupling constant. Then you can find this solution. In this solution, you have, by construction, the solution is started from m equals zero. We are starting from massless solution, and then considering m as perturbation. Instead of considering Newton coupling as perturbation. So you see here it is correction proportional to power m. The leading solution for nu and lambda coincides by construction from with the one which was massless theory. And you can see that this correction again blows up and at r larger than this critical radius I talked before. So in this way, you do have a solution which works in the range r larger than Schwarzschild radius and smaller than critical radius, but you cannot continue it in this approximation beyond that. So asymptotic behavior is not known. Okay, so not clear what does it mean in a sense that I would try to formulate in the following, that it seems after, you know, not only this study, which I did in 72, then from recent studies, that in some sense there is local solution continuous in M, in a sense that if you are not trying to write your solution, which, for example, satisfies the condition that your function are zero, so your metric is Minkowski at infinity. Okay,
I'm missing something.
Yeah.
When you say the asymptotic is not known,
asymptotic for R larger than RC.
I see, but you had an explicit solution on the previous transparency, but it's an expansion in G. Right?
Yeah.
And you say it's.
And here it is not expansion in G.
It's non-analytic.
Yeah, you see square root of R there.
I see.
Yeah. However, it's kind of summation of perturbation theory, but for a radius smaller than RC, in the range of Song coupling.
So. Is this the issue of when loops start becoming important? No.
No. Of course, it is exactly true that it is. It was some classical approximation, but you can view it as model for loops, right? So loops were blowing up. Every next one was larger and larger. Here I am giving you a result of summation of those loops, and the result of summation is such that it kind of. Screens the C. What is the idea? That this longitudinal polarization, heuristic zero polarization, screens itself. You can view it in some ways that you have an original source mass, which is the sun. Then around sun, you have an object which is this longitudinal quanta, right? Which interacts strongly with the sun. So you have a kind of halo around, and halo is very large in a sense. So this halo reshuffle your metric rather strongly in this sense, and to the extent that this extrapolization becomes, at least for this solution, becomes cleaned up, right? What is not clear whether I can, you know, trust this solution everywhere because it's can, yeah.
Why yeah. Is it green?
No, because you see, I do not have exchange by heuristic zero at the limit. It's by construction, it is the same as mass theory. Yeah?
The agreement of the spin down of the binary pulsar with Einstein's theory to a third of a percent.
Yeah.
Right, gives a very strong limit in the usual way of thinking on scalar fields.
In this sense, you see, already Benden of sun is also known, the Benden of light by sun is also known by at the level of say 1% or a few percent, right? So it's certainly enough to say that, okay, you can... Screen means that after screening, you are back to mass theory. Because what is screen, it is this extra object. We introduce an extra field, which is which has a strong interaction, and this strong interaction itself means the form that emission of this quanta, which we do see in every order of perturbation theory, and moreover it blows up in every next order, like 1 over m to some power, then we are saying that let's sum it up, and after summing up, the amplitude of emission of this quanta is zero, in the limit of very strong coupling. It is this type of model here, because I'm starting from the other end. I'm starting from m equals zero and saying that I have a continuity to m equals zero. So it could be, as I said, it could be wrong because it's not a global solution. It's a local solution which could be called, right? Because whatever if you have in mind that asymptotically we have decreasing Yukawa behavior, right? This is not checked because it is in the range where I do not see any Yukawa decaying exponent yet.
Can you actually get the theory consistent with the experiment or not?
I'm trying to make it consistent with the experiment, because if it's true, then in the range of R much smaller than RC, you do have consistency.
Okay, well then my question is it consistent with the binary pulsar?
No, because then it's not distinguishable for normal Einstein theory.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. However, what I'm trying to explore it is the part how well it's theoretically established, because the phenomenological side is very well established, and theoretical side is not very well established, as you see, because it's not clear what whether this solution could be proven to exist globally, and it is where people discuss a lot of different problem arises.
This last sentence on this.
Yeah.
You mean if I write down nonlinear theory, massive spin 2 theory.
Yeah, but it is what I'm going to
talk.
Yeah, it is what I'm going to tell, because it's what, because you have the theory, and the theory was originally defined in the linear approximation as a massive theory, and the linear approximation was okay, but then you should try to follow further and to consider the theory at nonlinear level, and it is what was detailed studied also with this very early paper by Bulwer and Deser in 72, and what they claim it is the following. They claim exactly what you ask about, that the theory is not well defined beyond linear approximation. To get a hint how it could be that it's not well defined, that before in linear approximation we had this equation as a condition as a consequence of our equation, because energy momentum measure was conserved, and okay, you can check that it is automatically this way. This condition in linear approximation automatically implies that scalar curvature is zero, because scalar curvature identically has this form. So then you have another condition for the trace, that the trace is zero in the range where t is zero. So then you have five components indeed. However, once we go to nonlinear level, this expression is not true anymore. It's true only linearly. So then you would not get algebraic condition for H. You will get some condition which contains higher terms in R and H, right? So in this way, H is not excluded. So you and it means and they interpret this as existence of the sixth degree of freedom, namely H, because now H is not non-zero, and you have a sixth degree of freedom, and moreover, this when you have this extra degree of freedom, you can see that the theory becomes untable. When to see this, you need to use this H. So once you have this extra H, and taking certain sine waves, say like H to be negative, then you will see that energy is not positively defined, and then there is no statement of stability of your original Minkowski metric at all. Okay, people later like this two guys in 86 and recently Gabadadze and Grazunov in NYU, they started this process and claimed that that indeed it would be instability, so indeed it would be decay of the system, and the system even not metastable, so it decays fast. So in as you see, so in this sense, it's discussion at this non-linear level is much more worse than it was with in the case of non-abelian young Mills, because here you do not know even stable theory how it looks like. Moreover, if we will forget about that, so this solution which we discussed could be viewed only perturbatively in a sense. You're starting from Minkowski metric, you are doing near this. This is well defined. However, if you are trying to seriously consider this nonlinear theory, you see that it doesn't work very well. Particular interesting development was in the paper by Salam and Sazdi, who in 77 found some non perturbative solution of a very much different kind. I mean, the approach they said they use with two gravitational fields, I don't know, maybe somebody remembers from the time, they call it strong gravity. Essentially, the same approach was used in the paper I mentioned before by Kani Hamed, Josie, and Schwartz, but I'm not sure that those sources probably didn't know such old paper. But anyway, when they consider this, Salam and Sazdi consider this, they found a solution which I do not have time to put here, but it is a solution corresponding to so-called Schwarzschild de Sitter solution. So you're starting from this mass term. This mass term does not look as cosmological constant, right? What they proved that there is a non-perturbative solution which looks exactly like solution with cosmological constant and with the center. And cosmological constant is proportional to mass graviton square. So in this sense, you get a non-perturbative solution which also continues in terms of however this continuity is of very different kind, right? Because asymptotic of this solution of this cosmological contents, it is some power of R, like R square, I believe. It behaves R square at large R, so it's very much different from what we would think about, it's neither decreasing or increasing exponent at all. So in this sense, it was one thing, and it was also another recent statement by Damon Kogan and Papazoglu, who tried to do the solution of Schwarzschild problem numerically. And what they claim that when they try to do this global solution with certain asymptotic behavior, they were getting something like next singularity. So there is no, they could not find the way to continue, you know, from small r to large r if asymptotic at large r is, decay.
Where is the singularity?
In the middle, so you are trying to do numerically. You are saying that it's regular, you know, a smaller r, it's regular at larger r, decreasing, and then you are trying to match, and there is no way. They did not find the way to match. So in this way, and this is what I'm trying to mention to say that the situation overall is, as you see, is not well defined. So we are lacking of something like analog of Higgs mechanism for this case to make where we can make kind of certain statement. Of course, you, what is going on now is that in most of papers, people are taking approach, okay, let's forget everything, let's stay in the region where perturbation theory still works, like in chiral theory. You are not going, I mean, there. And this is certainly true, but it doesn't help you then to answer the question whether this limit does exist in certain sense or it doesn't exist because you cannot get there. Okay, that's it.
I'll encourage questions, especially from the astrophysicist, Michael Fessler.
So why does the solution have to be
asymptotic? Say it again?
Why does the solution have to be asymptotic?
No. In terms of a real physical cosmology, I certainly agree that there is no this condition, right? So, and you see, in this sense, this Solan-Stasi solution would be okay, right? It has continuity, but it's kind of non-uniform continuity, right? Because the place where you are approaching massive theory itself depends strongly on your mass, right? I agree with that. However, I try to say that also the theory is not well defined, right? So if the theory would be stable, and we would say that only this type of solution is okay, or the type of.
What exactly do you mean by
instability?
What is the process?
That energy is not limited from below. It could be arbitrarily negative. No, because if you will consider comparison the linear approximation, so then you can introduce this kind of pseudo-tensor, whatever. At least in the linear approximation, you explicitly can show up that Minkowski solution, Minkowski-Metic solution is stable.
They're saying runaway mode.
When you have non-zero mass.
Yeah, I mean, for this, consider.
If you will have a nonlinear terms, yes, there is a runaway mode, and it is what people called instability, calculation of instability. So they were trying to see dynamics. So you are starting near Minkowski space, and then you see that you are not back, and that you are running away.
Small perturbation for classical waves.
And moreover, you see, in terms of our counting of physics component, I mean, degrees of freedom, right? It's the way it looks like it is not a theory we had in mind, right? Because the crucial difference is that, of course, is that in gravity you have a kinetic term which depends on the field itself, right? Normally, it does not happen for the reason that once you arrange this potential part, you are not afraid of derivative part. Now, the point is that you have a term which some degree of freedom which appears only due to nonlinear part. Because if you doesn't include this nonlinear part, you do not see this sixth degree of freedom at all. And it is a phenomenon which has no analog in say, non-abelian meals.
So that's a sign that Minkowski, something wrong in Minkowski space. Otherwise,
they're theorems. Right, but in this sense, we are probing. We are trying to find a theory which is neighboring to Einstein theory, and we essentially did not find one, because the theory which was okay in linear approximation doesn't seem okay beyond it. Right. So in this way.
You don't have a question. You have a question, Phil?
Yeah. So in this sense, I would not find the situation satisfactory at the moment.
Other questions? Matthew?